Hello, lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to another Life Note, this time for Emotional Month, March 2021, moving you one book closer to a 12-category smart life. I'm your host, Jordan River, as usual, and today's Life Note is Loving What Is by Byron Katie. As always, let's begin with a quote. The more clearly you understand yourself and your emotions, the more you become a lover of what is. Core concept. In the midst of a normal life, Byron Katie plunged into a 10-year period of depression, anger, and despair. Then one day she woke up filled with joy, peace, and freedom from her suffering. In her book, Loving What Is, Katie gives us the work, a formula that consists of four simple questions that we can apply to our problems to ultimately reach our own state of peace. Trying to let go of our painful thoughts never works, but once we do the work, the thoughts will let go of us so that we can truly love what is just as it is. So let's dive into today's first big idea. A rebirth. The beginning of the work. Quote, we don't attach to people or to things. We attach to uninvestigated concepts that we believe to be true in the moment. End quote. On a February morning in 1986, a 43-year-old woman woke up on the floor of a halfway house. The woman was Byron Kathleen, known to most simply as Katie. And it was on that morning that the work was born. Somehow in the midst of her ordinary life, Katie began a 10-year-long downward spiral into rage, paranoia, and depression. She confined herself to her room, doing her business over the phone, unable to bathe or brush her teeth. Her children were scared for her. Finally, she checked herself into the halfway house. After about a week or so, Katie woke up on the floor of her room without any concept of whom or what she was. Quote, all my rage, all the thoughts that had been troubling me, the whole world was gone, end quote. Laughter poured from her as she became overcome with joy. Katie returned home. Her children were no longer afraid of her, and they recognized immediately the peace and comfort that had come over her. It took Katie a long time to be able to explain what had happened to her. She would speak of a freedom that had woken up inside of her, that through inner questioning, she had realized that all her old thoughts were untrue. She communicated this inner inquiry in the form of specific questions that anyone who wanted to know the kind of freedom she had achieved. Anyone could apply them on their own without her. The questions are all about questioning our thoughts and seeking out what is true in the moment. This specific set of questions, four to be precise, and the internal inquiry and turnaround that result are what Katie calls the work. In this note, we'll take a close look at the work, dissecting its key questions and resulting freedom that we can all realize in our own lives. Let's begin by looking at the basic principles underpinning the work. Getting started, catching your stories. Quote, what I love about the work is that it allows you to go inside and find your own happiness, to experience what already exists within you, unchanging, immovable, ever-present, ever-waiting. No teacher is necessary. You are the teacher that you've been waiting for. End quote. The primary message that Katie is trying to get across in this book is that we are the ones, the only ones, who can end our own suffering. And we can do just that by engaging in the work. Getting started can be uncomfortable and a little bit difficult, so Katie gives us a few basic principles to help us out. The first principle is to notice when our thoughts argue with reality. Quote, the only time we suffer is when we believe a thought that argues with what is. When the mind is perfectly clear, what is what we want. End quote. Wanting reality to be different than it is like trying to teach a cat to bark. Hopeless. If we pay attention, we'll notice that we have thoughts that argue with reality about a zillion times a day. This line should be shorter. Those kids shouldn't be so obnoxious. My husband or wife should be more helpful. Thoughts like these are ways of arguing with reality. Sounds depressing? Well, it is. All of the stress we feel stems from thinking reality should be something that it's not. But, quote, when we stop opposing reality, actions become simple, fluid, kind, and fearless, end quote. And we learn to love what is. The second principle is staying in our own business. Katie defines three different types of business in the world: mine, yours, and God's. In this context, Katie defines God as reality, anything that is out of my control or your control or anyone else's control, not necessarily a religious entity. Much of our stress comes from our mentally living out of our own business. When we're in someone else's business or reality's business, the effect is separation, hurt, and loneliness. Realizing when we're mentally in someone else's business can bring us back to ourselves to focus on what's right for us. Next, Katie instructs us to meet our thoughts with understanding. Quote, a thought is harmless unless we believe it. It's not our thoughts, but the attachment to our thoughts that is causing the suffering. End quote. Thoughts just appear. They come out of nowhere and disappear into nothing. They're perfectly harmless unless we attach to them as if they're true. Katie says that it is important not to let go of our thoughts, that if we meet them with understanding, they will let go of us and release us from our pain and our stress. The fourth principle that Katie introduces is becoming aware of our stories. By stories, she means thoughts or sequences of thoughts that we convince ourselves are real. They are the untested theories that we come up with to explain things we actually don't know anything about. Like when someone gets up and leaves the room unexpectedly and without a word, or when someone doesn't return a phone call. We can use the work to catch our stories before they become bigger and take over our lives. Next, Katie introduces us to the principle of looking for the thought behind the suffering. She confesses that she's never experienced a stressful feeling that wasn't caused by attaching to an untrue thought, and she bets the same is true for the rest of us. Quote, behind every uncomfortable feeling, there's a thought that isn't true for us, end quote. First, we have a thought that contradicts reality. That thought then causes us to feel stress. We then act on that feeling, creating more and more stress for ourselves. Rather than seeking out the cause behind the feeling, the thought, we look outside ourselves. We turn to things like food, sex, drugs, alcohol, shopping, etc. to make us feel better. But we should treat the feelings like an alarm, letting us know that there's a thought we probably need to do the work on. Investigating these untrue thoughts will always lead us back to who we really are. Finally, Katie tells us about inquiry. Synonymous with the work, to inquire is to put our thoughts and/or stories up against Katie's four questions and turnaround. We'll learn more about these in the following sections. It is a way to end confusion and to reach a state of internal peace. Inquiry is more than a technique. After we've practiced it for a while, it will permeate every corner of our mind and become a way of life. We'll be full of peace, joy, and self-realization. Just one more thing we need to know before we begin the work. Write it down. Katie is adamant that we write down our thoughts in all their petty, rude, immature glory. She recommends choosing one person or thing that bothers us and then writing down all of the thoughts we have about them. We can then take the statements one at a time and subject them to the scrutiny of the work. Now that we know the principles behind the work, let's dive into its specifics, namely the four questions and the turnaround. Question 1. Is it true? Quote, the truth is whatever is in front of you, whatever is really happening, end quote. Once we have written down all of our thoughts, no matter how nasty, about that one person or that one thing or that one situation, we take each item and we go through the list of questions. The first question is simply, is it true? Sometimes it's glaringly obvious that the thought is just not true. If that's the case, Katie gives us permission to go straight to question three. Usually, however, the answer to this question is not so easy and requires some closer examination. If our answer to this question is yes, we should ask ourselves what the reality of the particular situation is. For example, let's take a look at the statement, Paul shouldn't watch so much television, a phrase Katie uses in the book. What's the reality of it? In her experience, did Paul watch too much television? Katie says yes, the reality is Paul watches between 6 and 10 hours every single day. She may not like it, but that's what's true. This thought that Paul shouldn't watch so much television is just a way to mentally argue with what is. Doesn't do any good. Doesn't change Paul. Its only effect is to cause stress. Quote, the truth is whatever is in front of you, whatever is really happening, end quote. In reality, should and shouldn't don't exist. By asking what the reality of the situation is, we can bring our minds out of their stories and back into the real world. This is also a good opportunity for us to look at whose business we're in when we're thinking the thoughts that we've written. When we think that someone or something other than ourselves needs to change, we're out of our own business. In her example, Paul was over there living his life in front of the television, and so was she, mentally. There was no one left to live hers. Question 2. Are we sure? Quote, where reality is concerned, there is no what should be. There is only what is, just the way it is, right now. End quote. If our answer to question 1 is yes, the next question we are going to ask about our thought is, can we absolutely know that it's true? In many cases, our statements appear to be true, thus making it past question 1, but this is because we're basing our beliefs on a lifetime of uninvestigated thoughts. When we ask the second question, we're forced to think more critically about our thoughts. When we listen within ourselves, we see that the world is what it is, nothing more, nothing less. Just like we saw with question 1, there is no should or should not. There only is what is. When we ask ourselves if we can absolutely know that our statement is true, we will see that the world is always as it should be, whether we oppose it or not. We will be one step closer to loving what is. If upon this closer examination, we know that our statement can absolutely be true, Katie says we can move on to question 3. But if we feel a little stuck, she gives us a few exercises to help. They can help us dig deeper and coax our thoughts out into the open when we feel like our yeses are half-hearted or are grinding our inquiry to a halt. The first exercise is to add the following statement to our original thought. And it means that blank. Sometimes our suffering may be caused by a thought that interprets what happened rather than the thought we wrote down. By adding this phrase, we are prompted to reveal our interpretation of the fact. When we know our interpretation, we can take it to inquiry, writing down a new statement and subjecting it to the questions. Another exercise is to ask ourselves what we think we would have if reality was cooperating with us, aka if our written statement was true. Once again, we can write down this new thought, what we would have, and subject it to inquiry. We can take statements like, I'm angry at my partner because he or she doesn't contribute to the housework, and change them to, my partner should contribute to the housework. These statements might be a little easier for us to investigate through the work. The rewritten form may help us be more open to discovering a deeper truth. The final exercise Katie recommends is to look at our proof. Sometimes we will be convinced that our statement is true, and we believe that we absolutely know that it's true, but we haven't really examined our proof. If we really want to know the truth, we should bring all of our evidence out into the open and put it to the test of inquiry. Question 3. How do we react? Quote, your nature is truth, and when you oppose it, you don't feel like yourself. Stress never feels as natural as peace does. End quote. The third question we are to ask about our thought is, how do we react when we think that thought? This question brings internal cause and effect to our attention. We can see that when we believe our thought, we have an uneasy feeling that can range from a slight discomfort to severe fear or panic. If in question one, we discovered that the thought isn't even true, we are witnessing the power of a lie. Typically, before we attach ourselves to a thought, we find that our minds are fairly quiet and peaceful places. We have no stress or disturbing reactions. This is who we are without our stories. But Katie prompts us with question three, to notice the feelings that come from attaching to our thoughts and our stories. They not only produce uneasy and stressful feelings, they also give us mental pictures to prove that our thought is true. We fly off into a world that doesn't exist. To bring ourselves back to Earth and relieve our suffering, we need only investigate. In this section, Katie also reveals a couple of follow-up questions she sometimes asks to supplement question three that can bring about radical shifts in awareness. The first is, can we see a reason to drop that thought? Inquiry is about noticing, not about dropping our thoughts. But once we see that we do in fact have a reason to drop the thought, we were at peace before it entered our minds, but after it entered we felt stressed, it will drop us. The second supplemental question is, can we find one stress-free reason to keep the thought? On the surface, we may see lots of reasons why we should keep our thought. But upon closer examination, we see that all of them cause stress and hurt. None are peaceful or valid if we are dedicated to putting an end to our suffering. Question four, who would we be? Quote, without our stories, we are not only able to act clearly and fearlessly, we are also a friend, a listener. We are people living happy lives. End quote. The fourth and final question we must ask about the thought we wrote down is, who would we be without the thought? It's a very powerful question. Katie asks us to imagine ourselves standing in front of the person we've written about while they do whatever it is that we think they shouldn't be doing. After taking a minute or two to close our eyes and take a deep breath, we are to imagine who we would be if we couldn't think this thought. How would our lives be different? Would we be kinder and calmer if we could get rid of our story? A lot of people can't even begin to imagine their lives without their story. So, I don't know is a common answer to this question. Many other people, however, answer with, I'd be free, I'd be calm, or I'd be more loving. Our answer may leave us without an identity. That may sound scary, but Katie says we should look at it with excitement. We're left with nothing but the reality of the moment. We get to start from scratch, living in our truth, loving what is. If our fear is intense, we can write down what it is we are afraid of and run that through the work. Quote, the goal of inquiry is to bring us back to our right mind so we can realize for ourselves that we live in paradise and haven't even noticed. End quote. The turnaround. Quote, bring the truth home to yourself and begin to set yourself free. Inquiry combined with the turnaround is the fast track to self-realization. End quote. The turnaround, while not one of the questions, is a very powerful and really important part of the work. This is where we take what we have written about others, apply it to ourselves, and see if it's true or truer. By bringing the truth home to ourselves, we begin to set ourselves free. We no longer play the role of the victim. It's important to note here that we must use the four questions before applying the turnaround. They give us the necessary education for the turnarounds to be helpful. Katie discusses three types of turnarounds. We can turn our judgments around to ourselves, to the other, or to the opposite. And there are many combinations of these that we can play with. Quote, the point is not to find the most turnarounds, but to find the ones that set you free from the nightmare that you're innocently attached to. End quote. Let's go back to the Paul example and see what these turnarounds look like. We'll use Katie's statement. Paul should appreciate me. First, we'll turn this on ourselves. I should appreciate myself. Next, we turn it on the other. I should appreciate Paul. Finally, we turn it to the opposite. Paul shouldn't appreciate me. Once we do this for our own statements, we must be willing to go inside with each turnaround and ask if it's as true or truer than the original statement. After we do this, Katie recommends that we list three examples in our own lives where each turnaround is true to complete the turnaround. Perhaps most importantly, we need to live the turnarounds. Quote, self-realization is not complete until it lives as action, end quote. We should practice what we've been preaching to others for so long. When our attention is on our own behavior and our own reality, we can be at peace and truly love what is. I hope you enjoyed spending this time with me today for this lovely life note. I look forward to bringing you more wisdom next month and each and every month as we explore the 12 categories together. This is Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time for the next life note, moving you one book closer to a 12-category smart life. Bye-bye.